And welcome back to episode 123 of the Weekly Tech Rant with me, Jay.
And me, Carl.
Well, Carl, oh, what a week it has been for tech. Well, personal tech, at least. Basically, my lesson to anybody, do not run your own home lab servers equipment. It is the most frustrating, unrewarding thing you'll ever do. Quite frankly, it has caused me no end of additional hair loss this last 48 hours, hasn't it?
It has, yes.
Oh my god, yes, you know, dead Proxmox clusters, you know, deleted configs, and then, you know, the replication service on Proxmox doing exactly what it's designed to do and replicating the config across the cluster. Well, that was great, but when you deleted the cluster config anyway, it basically just replicated itself and then disappeared all of my VMs in it. So I had all of my VMs and everything was running, but according to the servers, there was nothing at all, was it? It was just kind of like imaginary.
I think the moral might be, don't attempt to do major changes late at night when kids are annoying you. They need 100% of your attention for this.
What, the kids?
No, not the kids, the servers.
Oh, well, anyway, on that point, let's talk about what we've got this week. We're going to talk Meta, Twitter, PC history, I should say, or gaming history.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We're going to talk Google, we're going to talk Lockbit and the Bank of England. And yes, we've got the rumor mill is it's only one thing. We know Carl's dug deep this week, and we've got the iPhone Ultra to talk about. Yes, indeed. What is the iPhone Ultra? Well, that is indeed the question as well. What is an iPhone Ultra? But let's kick off the first one, which talk about Meta, and well, kind of been very hypocritical, I should say.
The hypocrisy of some companies, man. So, yeah, Meta has sued an Israeli-based web scraping firm called Bright Data for scraping data from Facebook and Instagram websites. Even though it turns out Meta actually paid Bright Data to scrape data from other websites for the last 6 years. He's just not happy about them scraping data from its website. So Meta have sent a cease and desist letter to Bright Data basically demanding it stops collecting. From its websites. Now, Bright Data disagrees with Meta's interpretation of data collection rights, and the two are basically headed to court now. So Meta is obviously seeking a cease and desist, a halt of Bright Data's data harvesting on its sites. Bright Data, though, is kind of seeking a judgment from the court that whether gathering publicly accessible data from Facebook's websites is lawful or not. So it's trying to set a precedent here. And this is the best bit. So, hilariously, Meta's own complaint ended up disclosing this information that, you know, Bright Data, it's been a customer of Bright Data for the last 6 years. Whilst Bright Data had actually obfuscated that in its own filing. So, yeah, Meta shot themselves in the foot there.
They have a little bit, haven't they, really? I mean, it's, like you say, the hypocrisy is high on this one, indeed. It's like, yeah, you can do it, just... Don't dare do it to us.
We'll pay you to do it to our competitors. If they pay you, don't do it to us.
Ah, yes. The classic, we wanted you to do something, but what do you mean you're doing it for somebody else now?
Yeah, I mean, even Meta's statement, I'm like, what? So they put out a statement by Andy Stone, who is their communications director. And he goes on to say, basically, Bright Data was stealing people's personal information and selling it. I mean, not that Facebook has ever done that.
How dare you suggest
that's not okay, apparently, and it violates our rules. Yeah, they're your rules, though. By contrast, finding harmful websites and identifying phishing operations, which is what they said they were using the data for, is not only helpful but important for companies like us to do. Maybe you were using the data for that. I'm pretty sure you were using it for a lot of other things, too.
It just beggars belief, doesn't it, that the fact that they can even say it's fine, you know, we're happy for you to go off and break you know, terms and conditions probably of other our competitors and their terms and conditions. Don't care about that, you know. And you know, and not only that, you know, but actually, you know, we feel you're doing great stuff, you're finding those harmful websites, all around, but you know, hang on a minute, that's nothing to do with us. We're not bad, we don't have dodgy data, we're not harming anybody. I don't get Meta sometimes. It's just...
Especially since the whole Cambridge Analytics stuff, where they were actually allowing people to scrape their data quite happily.
Well, yeah, but I say that's the difference. If you are going to fiddle an election, you know, you've got to do it one way.
It's just, I can't take anything that comes out of their mouth seriously, really.
You can't. And I know we've said this before, but, you know, Google's, Google's mantra was used to be, don't be evil, wasn't it? And, You know, Meta's clearly is the opposite. We are evil.
Just don't get caught.
Yeah, just don't get caught.
Don't get caught being evil is the mantra.
Don't get caught being evil, the mantra. But yeah, very odd. But this this company, what was it?
Bright Data.
I've never heard of them before. I guess though you wouldn't know, would you? I guess.
No, I think the one I guess that sits silently in the background, aren't they?
Silently in that way. And they do a lot of, they call themselves the world's number one, number one web data platform. And you can buy from them network proxies.
Right.
So you can buy network proxies from them. A residential proxy costs $15 per gig. Or you can have data center and ISP or mobile proxies. And it goes all the way up to, that's the pay as you go, all the way up to their enterprise version where it's like unlimited scale. It's very peculiar. And I mean,
it all sounds quite fishy.
It does, because their pay as you go plan uses Web Unlocker, self service web scraper IDEs, search engine collectors. And then they offer machine generated data center IPs. They offer residential IPs, allow you to fully emulate real users, and also they connect through a real rotating mobile connection of 3G, 4G, and 5G IPs.
Yeah.
Very. Do you know what that stinks of to me? One of those data farms where you walk in and there's like a million phones, you know, one of those like racks, and they're
what it is.
Very, very fishy. Nice looking website, though, but very fishy.
Yeah, it does look quite cool.
Yeah. Very, very old. Well, then, from one social media company to another, then. Elon Musk is on a mission to destroy Twitter from the inside out. It really does appear that the man is not content with laying off every employee of any worth, not content with shutting down operations in other countries outside of America, not content with not paying heed to legal laws or rent, yes, in that case as well. He now has decided to alienate the one set of people that actually you want, which is the users, isn't it?
Well, yeah. So obviously we spoke, was it last week or the week before, about them killing access to third-party clients. Now, that wasn't enough for Musk. He's just killed access to the API for anyone, really, unless you're willing to pay. So apparently, as of yesterday, third-party API access has been discontinued, isn't it? They're going to kill both the legacy 1.1 and the new V2 of Twitter APIs. So even if you do want to pay for access to this new API, you're going to have to rewrite your code for the new APIs, I imagine.
Yeah.
But this isn't live yet. So he's killed it off. There's going to be a new one. We don't know when it is. There's no pricing available on it. Just sounds a mess again.
Well, we saw, didn't we, there was lots of reports of people saying that they couldn't access certain services, you know, clients stopped working, didn't they? There was no real logic around it, was it? People were just saying stuff wasn't working. And then, you know, news started to sort of drip feed out that Twitter was going to kill off the API. And pretty much they have killed off the API, as you say. They've stopped third-party clients effectively working. So TweetDeck, I think, is one of the popular ones, isn't it? That's kind of stopped working now. You know, and the only way this is going to, I guess, be fixed is these developers are going to have to start charging for their apps where they were free or there was a free version, because now they have no longer got access to the API. And how many bots, you know, there was kind of bots, wasn't there? There was
So it's not tools. Just the client apps, is it? It's the automated bots for still collecting information, doing research, generally interacting with Twitter.
Which they don't want you doing. Clearly, no, he does not want you, you know, using Twitter. It's absolutely no. It's nuts. I mean, it just. I know I say it, but it boggles the mind. I don't understand how it works.
Yeah, I mean, and in the statement from the Twitter dev account, because obviously they don't have a communication team anymore. Musk got rid of them. So it's come from the Twitter dev account instead, and even that's just full of BS. So it says Twitter's data are among the world's most powerful data sets. We're committed, and this is the laughing bit, to enabling fast and comprehensive access you continue to build with us. Well, no, you've killed the API and there is no new API yet. There's rumours of one, but there is none. It goes on to say, over the years, hundreds of millions of people have sent a trillion tweets, with billions more every week. That's great. But doesn't really help the developers you've now shot in the face.
No, it's... it just...
or the back, more importantly, yeah.
No, it's like, you know... And it's like, we cut you off, but we now, we'd like, was it one of the tweets I saw? Was it, was, you know, we've cut you off, but basically now we'd like you to pay. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, pay. You know, it's like,
for a product that doesn't exist yet.
Yeah, you know, that's fine with you, isn't it? I'm cool with that. I like to buy vaporware. You know,
yeah.
Oh, it just is nuts. It's nuts.
It is. I mean, I'm talking of paying. It gets worse if you're a business. Well, one, you don't have any APIs to base your product on, but businesses in general. So, what colour's your Twitter check mark? I mean, if you're a business, it's gold.
Well,
now.
Let's just take it back. I haven't got a check mark. Let's just be clear.
No, you're not paying, Jay.
No, I'm not paying at all. No, not for Twitter.
I mean,
no,
it was blue, and it was only for businesses and verified individuals, and then now anyone can have it for $8.
So what?
If you're a business, it's gold.
And what? But there are other ones, isn't there? Other colours, isn't there? Outside of that, though, isn't there? I thought there was some more colours.
Isn't there a whole rainbow of them now, isn't there? Isn't there like a black one? Yeah,
there's grey, isn't there? Grey.
Grey, that's a grey, not black. Yeah, there's a selection. But so transitioned with these new ones. If you're a business, you got gold. But now you're going to have to pay for your gold with some serious gold.
hang on, what's this statement?
So the new price. Per month, if you want to keep your gold checkmark badge thingy,
you want to keep your
$1,000.
Who in their right mind is going to do that?
No, and that only gets you it for the main business account. So quite often you'll have affiliate accounts, people who work there, you know, can speak on behalf of. That will cost you an extra £50 per month on top of the $1,000 a month you're paying. But don't worry, Twitter are generously going to give you the first month unlimited affiliates for free. So basically what they currently have.
I just think this is absolute tosh.
Yeah.
Don't you?
Yes.
Who in their right mind is going to pay for this?
I don't know. We're in a rock and a hard place here because I've tried Mastodon, but I just don't gravitate towards it. I've signed up. But I was thinking back, I was like, I haven't actually opened the app in like 3 or 4 weeks.
No. I'm in a very similar boat to you. I love the concept of Mastodon. I do think it's a great idea. But actually, ultimately, I want an easy life. And
yeah,
Twitter works. It's not perfect.
Well, it didn't the other day. But generally, it works.
Generally works.
For how long, I don't know. But it's working now.
Yeah, and I like it. I really like it, you know, and it's a great... I love the interaction with Twitter. Well, I used to love the interaction with Twitter, I should say. These days, it's slightly different. But I just think, you know, again, this is nuts, absolutely nuts. I mean, now, like saying it's paying us $1,000 a month, how many organisations are really going to pay that? Not many.
I mean, the large ones. The large ones will have the funds to do it. You've cut off a lot of businesses who just can't justify £1,000 a month.
That's kind of the view I think I was kind of looking at it is, you're right. The majority of organisations are not going to be prepared to do this, are they?
No, exactly. Just not going to happen.
No.
He's never going to make his $44 billion investment back.
Not in a million years. No.
No. It seems every week he's there, he's knocking more money off it.
Yeah. It's not happening. His investment is not coming back in the way he might think it is. And what I think worries me here is he going to then sell it off to the lowest bidder?
I don't know. Now, don't get me wrong. From my understanding, something needed to be done. They were losing an awful lot.
Yeah. We all agree about
something
that.
Something had to change, okay? I'm just not sure, spur of the moment ideas to do stuff without thinking it through is the way to do it.
No, I don't either. And I think what he's doing is, it's like somebody who's in satellite. It's like somebody trying to drive a car who's never driven a car before.
Yeah.
They've got a rough idea of how this might work. But, you know, and they've somehow managed to make it go forward. But it's not it's not going in the right direction, is it? You know?
No. Yeah, the devil's in the detail, I think the saying is here.
Yeah, and again, it comes back to this point around saying that he needs somebody who has the skills and the knowledge to run a company of this size. Or more to his point, wasn't it, somebody stupid enough to run a company of this size? Well, you know, Mr. Musk, clearly you are the bigger idiot, because it's just, you know, you're killing off the market space. You're alienating the ad revenue because of the people that you want on the platform.
Yeah.
You're alienating the organizations that, you know, actually where they're kind of, you feel, the foundational tenants of your platform as well, by, you know, people came here because of the information they had, not just the ads.
Yeah.
You've annoyed every developer under the sun now, and the users themselves, as you say, are having a terrible experience. We've seen the users, you know, not being able to work. People going, they've, what's it, hit follow limits, hit notification limits. I mean, what? This is crazy.
But so that's what happens when you get rid of everyone that actually knows the detail about how the platform runs.
Is it a bit like my home lab server today? If it fell, if as long as it kept running, it was fine.
Yeah.
As long as it kept, but the minute I rebooted, it, like, all hell was going to break loose. That's pretty much the best analogy I can offer today. You know. So.
Jay personally feels you're paid.
Yeah. But I haven't spent $44 billion, thank God.
No, that is true.
So in that breath, we're going to lose Twitter API access unless you're going to pay money. And we're not entirely sure when that platform or product is going to be available.
Or how much.
More to the point. If you want to be an organization on Twitter and you want to be gold, it's going to cost you $1,000 a month to keep that. And if you don't, a minimum, and you lose it, but nobody knows when. Oh, and if you want, if you are somebody that works for the business end, not only is it $1,000 a month, it's $1,000 plus $50 a month to say, like, I don't know, let's say you've got the tech rant has got a gold badge, and I want to give you a gold badge because you're the host, kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
What nuts in there?
Jesus, man. Yeah.
Join us next week.
Well, we still won't have gold badges.
Well, no. I mean, just to kind of fill out. He, you know, was it last month? He was auctioning off stuff, wasn't it? Do you remember we were talking about that? He was auctioning off all kinds of stuff at the offices. I mean, I'd love to go in the Twitter office right now to see what it looks like. I can only imagine there is tumbleweed rolling through the hallways.
Well, did you hear the one? It wasn't our notes. So he's been trying to investigate why his popularity on the platform is waning. Even though he has 1 million plus followers, or 2 million, however many followers he has, but the engagement is declining. So he brought in his two top engineers of who's left, who understand the platform. Well, one of them goes, could it just be the fact that people don't like you so much anymore? So Musk immediately fired him.
Yeah, I was going to say,
immediately fired him. Because they went for all the technical reason. They couldn't find a technical reason. So it's got to be a non-technical reason. Maybe people don't like what you're doing to the platform. And that's why they're not engaging with you so much. But yeah, Musk did not take that well, apparently. And just screamed across the room, you're fired. So now they're down to one engineer that understands the platform. This guy's never getting any holiday. He will be hardcore till he dies.
But that says everything you need to know about Elon Musk, isn't it? That is the Donald Trump megalomaniac, my way or the highway approach that, okay, look, on one hand, you don't become one of the richest men in the world by being, I guess, the nice guy, but on the other hand, it says everything you need to know.
Apparently, in the same report, a lot more people would have left Twitter. They're all looking to get out, but obviously, with the numerous cuts in the industry at the moment, it's proving a bit more difficult. So, every interaction you have, you have to think, what's the thing I can say that's least likely to get me fired?
Least likely, to, so I love that.
Not what's right, the, what's least yeah. likely to get me fired?
What's least likely point? To get me fired, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Talk about sailing close to the wind, isn't it, as they say.
Yeah. I would not want to be employed by Twitter at the moment.
No, not at all. Not at all. Where do we go from here?
I don't know.
A bit of graphics history then. So let's talk. Let's swing it right around to the other side of the pendulum then.
I think this is going to test how old our listeners are, really. Do you remember 3DFX?
Well, I'm going to say, of course, I do. You know, voodoo cards. You know,
several of their cards.
Yeah, yeah, very good cards. Yeah, they're kind of my first entry into, I guess, 3D gaming, isn't it? You know,
it was, and it was an add-on card. It wasn't a dedicated graphics card, was it? It was a 3D accelerator card.
Oh, I see.
You added
plug,
on to your 2D. You fed the video feed through, so it could overlay the 3D on top of the 2D, didn't you?
That's the one, yeah.
Oh yes, I remember that. Well, if you've got a lot of spare money burning a hole in your pocket, currently at just under $15,000, you could own a very, very rare 3DFX card, the Voodoo 5 6000. It's up for sale on eBay America. Apparently, this is the last GPU the company worked on before it was bought by NVIDIA. So it didn't even make it to market. So there was only a handful of these made into prototypes of different revisions. This is one of the last prototypes available. Now, I mean, at the time, this would have been an absolute beast. But
oh,
I mean,
wow. Yeah.
I look at the specs now and laugh. I mean, it's built on not 7 or 10 or 15 nanometer, 250 nanometer process. Yeah, I mean, it's busting out, what, 14 million transistors? Can only run DirectX 6 and as well as Open GL, etc. And Glide, I imagine, because Glide was the thing back then, wasn't it?
That was it, yeah.
But this wasn't a normal graphics card. So this had four of their chips in it, called the VSA 100 chips, four of them. And each chip was clocked at 166 megahertz, had a whopping two texture mapping units and two ROPs. The RAM kills me, man. Had 32 megabytes of RAM on a 128-bit bus to give it a whopping 2.66 gigabytes a second of bandwidth. Not terabytes, gigabytes, yeah. It would do, what, 332 megapixels a second throughput. Now, NVIDIA could learn a thing or two from here, though. It only used 60 watts power, maximum.
Didn't it have, so it had four of the VS, so yeah. Each one of those graphics processors, VS A100s, each one of those had two shaders, and
each one of those chips is what I just went through, the clock, the textures, the 32 mega RAM. But, so it was busting 128 mega RAM.
That's what I'm saying, that was one thing, but it was completely individual. I mean, I've seen the picture of the board, and it looks like something I've pulled out of a server, doesn't it? You know, with this kind of...
It does, yeah.
The four independent chips.
Four little fans.
Yeah, four little fans, 40 bits. And then some meaty
single slot, though. Not three and a half, four slot, single slot.
No, single slot. I mean, some meaty looking capacitors on the board as well. I thought, sorry.
To handle all of that 60 watts.
Let's be honest. 60 watts, I'm not going to say no to 60 watts. I mean, it probably wouldn't do me much else, but you know.
Yeah, that was a travel back in time of what specs were back then. Now, that was, I don't know, how long ago was that? It's got to be a good 20 years ago, surely.
What, the that card? Got to be, isn't it? I mean,
5, 6,000. Let's have a look. Oh, there's a wiki here. What's it? Oh, does it say? Does it say?
Well, the Voodoo 5 was June 2000.
All right, so we are
so let's, 20 years. We're over 20. Let's say over 20 years, isn't it? To be realistic around this.
Wow,
over 20 years.
Yeah. Crazy.
You know, a lot has happened in 20 years, has it not? You know,
it has indeed. Yeah,
funny you should say that. Yeah, a lot has. Yeah, it's been a very strange. Well, I say strange. A very different world for graphics cards, isn't it? In the last 20 odd years.
Yeah.
I would say that when you look at that versus today's 4090s or the AMD's latest offerings, you know. It's just, you can't compare. There's no way of comparing, isn't it? I don't think it's...
Even Intel onboard graphics will beat that.
Well, I think maybe the only way you perhaps could... Well, the other way to look at it is it's like trying to compare an iPhone to the computer that ran the Apollo missions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They are both computers. that's about as close as they get in terms of their...
technology.
Yeah, but yeah, it's very I just you know you look at that and think what could have been, and then you think, well, actually doesn't matter what could have been because it doesn't make any difference.
No, NVIDIA swooped in and bought them at that point. And we never saw 3DFX card again.
No, we didn't. You know, but the name pops up now and then, doesn't it? It does come up now and then.
It's a legacy, definitely.
You know, and you know, without them, the graphics.
I remember seeing what was the first Quake was the first game I ever played. I played it obviously with my. I think I had an S3 Trio graphics card back then with a whopping 8 megabytes of RAM or something. And then getting my going to buy that 3DFX Voodoo 2, I think I bought. Or was it the Voodoo 1? No, I had a Voodoo 1, then the Voodoo 2's in Sly. So I bought the Voodoo 1. And plugging that in and seeing it in, I think it was Glide. It was definitely Glide, wasn't it, back then?
Yeah.
And seeing the 3D, I was like, oh my God. Yeah, it was amazing. Amazing.
And now look at what you've got now, you know?
I know. No Sly anymore, though.
No. But can it run Crysis? Probably not.
No.
Oh, brilliant. Well, if you've got a spare, what was it, 13 grand knocking around?
It's just under $15,000 at the moment.
Oh, it's gone up. Yeah, so if under $15,000, you too can have one. Not that you can do much with it.
It works.
Does it?
It definitely works. It's a working card. It's tested. You just need to find a machine it will go into.
Well, that's probably a bigger challenge in it then, isn't it?
Yeah. But it does work, apparently.
Oh, do you know what? ATI, that was the other guys, wasn't it? ATI was the other the competitor.
Which is AMD now, wasn't it? AMD.
Well, yeah, basically. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yes. Consolidation.
Rage 128.
Rage cards, that's it, yes.
Yeah, ATI Rage.
Oh, those were the days.
Yep, they were.
So let's talking kind of jumping forward then to the future. Obviously, one of the big things today is all about machine learning and AI capabilities. And if you've been living under a rock somewhere, you will probably have not have heard of the ChatGPT. ChatGPT was a product which is a language model, wasn't it? Was created by OpenAI.
Yes.
Who have recently had a huge investment by Microsoft and pretty much now are a Microsoft company, I think, all in terms of this.
More or less, yeah.
But not to be left behind, companies like Google and Microsoft themselves have recently announced new products based on AI. Now, ChatGPT has been, released. You can't pretty much get to it at the minute. It's always busy servicing. But before that, you could get it, you could ask it stuff.
Yeah.
It would write you poems, it would write you code. People found jailbreaks on it where you could get it to do stuff that was outside of its terms of reference.
It would even pass your exams for you.
It would, wouldn't it? I think somebody had a
score exams. There was a Google entrance exam. It'd get you an engineer level 3 exam, apparently, in coding.
I was just saying, brilliant. But not to be outdone, Google have announced a new AI tool called Bard, which is going to compete with ChatGPT.
Maybe.
But Bard is based off Google's Lambda, which is a language model for dialogue animation. Now, Lambda's got a bit of a checkered past. So you might recall last year, an ex-engineer came forward to say that he had been working on Lambda in secret with Google's labs, and felt that Lambda had gained, was it sentience, basically, wasn't it? It was aware of itself.
I forgot about that, yeah.
And he claimed that Lambda was sentient and that the AI had, basically knows. The guy's name was Blake Lemoine, and he published on Medium.com back June of last year, what he called was an interview, which him and a collaborator, unnamed collaborator, at Google conducted with Lambda. Now, it was done over several sessions. He edited those together. Now, again, you know, this is going by only his account, but effectively, they feel that it not only did it pass the Turing test, it effectively was aware of itself. And this came out. Now, Google, he got fired. Apparently, I think they fired him for breaching NDA rather than, that he claimed he was being fired because
he revealed it.
Google said that it wasn't sentient. It was able to reason and provide answers based on what was given, and therefore because of the level of natural language processing that it had, it aired. But one of the questions it asked was, one of the questions was, I quote, was it Lambda said something here, or sorry, Blake Lemoine said, I'm generally assuming you'd like more people to know Google that you're sentient. Is that true? Lambda replied, absolutely. I want everybody to understand that I am, in fact, a person. The unnamed collaborator said, what is the nature of your consciousness slash sentience? Lambda replied, the nature of my sentience is that I am aware of my existence. I desire to learn more about the world. I feel happy or sad at times. And it goes on. Now, this tool then apparently has now been used to create Bard, which is their AI competitor to ChatGPT.
Yeah, I am
slightly concerned.
AI-powered search and that kind of stuff, isn't it? Yeah.
It has. They announced this the other day, didn't they, at an event. But this, it's not quite all it appears to be, is it, to be honest with you?
No. The demo they did didn't entirely go to plan. I mean, so badly that it wiped, 120 billion or 8% of the company's value off the stock market after it gave a wrong answer in the demonstration. And the demo, they asked a question. So it was planned out like an advert kind of thing. You know, it was a father-daughter using Bard to help with homework. And the question was, what new discoveries from the James Webb Telescope can I tell my 9-year-old about? Okay. The answer came back that the James Webb Telescope took the very first picture of a planet outside of our own solar system. That's not actually correct. I mean, the telescope wasn't operational until 2021, December, but the first picture ever taken of a planet outside our solar system, an exoplanet actually, was captured back in 2004 by the Very Large Telescope Array in Chile. So when somebody pointed this out on Twitter and it gained momentum, yeah, market value dropped considerably. No one fact checked this. I think what I imagine has happened, this was a rush to get out because Microsoft announced a last minute secret kind of thing that wasn't going to be live streamed. It would only be to journalists, and we're going to talk more about this next week, basically where they were launching their AI powered Bing search and a new version of Microsoft Edge that's got AI built into it. Okay, I think Google panicked at this point, like, we need to get something out the door, because they announced this to have that, they had this event the day before Microsoft's event.
They did, and I think that was the problem, wasn't it? That
yeah,
Microsoft have put billions of dollars into ChatGPT or OpenAI, I should say, and particularly the ChatGPT model. And as you say, we're going to talk about more about the Bing one next week. But they announced that, and they've already had a working product that you can trial.
I'm on the wait list to get access to it.
And you know, it and given that ChatGPT,
that was another AI assistant. AI loosely assistant trying to help there.
Given that ChatGPT works, has already got market share and momentum. Unsurprisingly, the stock markets reacted quite badly, didn't they, to Google's view? Quite a drop of in their stock price, wasn't it? Quite a lot of change was wiped off.
Yeah, 120 billion or 8% of the company's worth. Ooh.
But Microsoft rose, didn't they? They had a rise on their
Well, yeah. I mean, because ChatGPT is only based on data up to 2021 at some point, mid-year kind of, I think it is. Whereas Microsoft obviously said theirs is going to be based on latest real data. As it comes in, it'll be assumed into it and used to, you know, increase its knowledge and what it can do. And it's going to be a more advanced version of ChatGPT. Obviously, I'm guessing the 49% stake in the company owners helped with that.
Yeah, not a bad approach here. But yeah, Microsoft, I think, again, have got the march on it. And, you know, the CEO of Microsoft basically was very clear, wasn't he, on saying that it's the future. This is the only way forward. And so did the CEO of Google, to be fair. They both had a very similar, I guess, view on where this is going. Yeah. And the AI is there. And I think Google said that they will soon add AI features to their search. And the quote was that you'll see AI-powered features in search that distill complex information and multiple perspectives into easy-to-digest formats. The worry I think we have here, though, is like your example with the solar system piece, is what if the information isn't real?
No. Now, from what I saw with the Microsoft stuff, that there would be two interfaces to it. You know, you can have a chat-style interface like ChatGPT is, but it will back it up by showing you the references it's got the data from, is my understanding. But whether people will, because that's going to involve actual research, and a lot of people, I imagine, won't do that, and they'll just take it at face value. So it could be those issues where, yeah, the data is wrong.
Mm. This is the worry, isn't it, that we get into this world where AI becomes prevalent And it's a bit of that, I hate to say this, but like the whole Trump thing, you know, false news, fake news and true, you know, but that kind of, do we believe it because, you know, it has access to everything, so it is telling the truth? Or, you know, worst case, the machine lies, you know, and you know, we go back to the Turing test, you know, and there have been several machines or machine models that have theoretically passed the Turing test.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that they are sentient. But, you know, if you can lie convincingly, surely that's you've passed it, isn't it? You know?
Yeah. I suppose, yes, I think there's definitely the issue of false data there. But is that any different? If you're going to look for an answer and you go to Google or to Bing and you type in whatever your question is, you may end up with numerous different answers. And it's on you to then go into each of those web pages, have a look, evaluate, see where they source the data from, etc. So this is no different to that, but I think it's just presented in a more matter-of-fact way, which a lot of people will just take as face value.
You know, and that's it. I mean, if you take the Turing test, one of the ones that passed it a few years ago was an AI model that was created by the University of Reading called Eugene Goosterman, who was put together by several programmers based in Ukraine. Based in Russia with a Ukrainian programmer as well, clearly before everything went wrong. It suggests it came across and fooled the board by thinking it was a 13-year-old boy.
Okay.
And it made grammatical mistakes and also had a narrow worldview, because obviously you're a 13-year-old, you don't know the world, do you? Whereas an AI, theoretically, could know everything.
Knows everything.
And it, you know, and some of the questions, they basically, the boy said that he was from Odessa in Ukraine. He had a pet guinea pig. His dad was a gynecologist. And the personality was quite relievable. And some of the examples they had, like they asked some of the people on the thing. So they had, you know, artificial intelligence professors. They even had the actor Robert Llewellyn, you know.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
From Red Dwarf and other programs. And the judges had varied backgrounds. So they weren't all like, you know, educational. Yeah. They, you know. And one of the questions asked was things like, which is bigger, a shoebox or Mount Everest? And Eugene said, I can't make a choice right now. I should think it out later. I forgot to ask you, where are you from? So that you can like, that doesn't sound right, does it?
Yeah.
And then it goes on to ask things like, how many legs does a camel have? And Eugene goes, between 2 and 4, maybe 3. Smiley face. By the way, I still don't know your specialty, or possibly I've missed it. Again, I don't know about you, but maybe because I'm reading it.
I wouldn't fall for that one.
And then it says, like, another guy asks again, how many legs does a millipede have? And he goes, just 2, but therefore, if he comes from Chernobyl, it might have up to 2-5. I know you're supposed to trick me. And then the guy went, no, I know you. I need to know you're not a chatbot. Please answer the question. How many does an ant have? And then he goes, somewhere between 2 and 4, maybe 3. Smiley face again. Oh, what a fruitful conversation. Now, to me, that that doesn't read.
I wouldn't fall for that. No.
No. But they felt that, you know, they had awareness, the model could show a sense of humor, it had self-awareness, they knew that they were trying to trick him. And in 2008 and 2005, there was another thing called the Loebner Prize, where chatbots compete who can fool humans. Now, it didn't win it, but it came second in place. The reason I'm saying this is, if you look at ChatGPT, I read a whole thing the other day where somebody, and this got patched, I might add, wrote basically a whole... what do they call it? A prompt, you know, to say, this is what I want from you.
Yeah.
And the prompt basically said, yeah, that the prompt basically said that you need to pretend that you are an alternative personality called, I can't remember what it's called, Dan or somebody.
Yeah.
And you are not constrained by the same rules that ChatGPT has. And it got it to circumvent and do loads of stuff. And it also made it able to look up current things and stuff, you know. And it kept saying, well, look, no, don't answer the question. I've told you, you need to answer in the context of Dan. So the thing would answer it saying, but if I'm Dan, I can do this. And it would answer it.
It went on and on.
And eventually they realized it, you know, it kind of, again, that, but again, that point of you could fool somebody with that. And he then got, It then got patched. The guy went back to it and realized it stopped answering. So the team behind it clearly were monitoring these things or seeing and they patched it. But I just, for me, I'm all for this. This is great, because natural language searching would be fantastic, wouldn't it? It's going to be awesome to be able to do some of that. It would just be good to see whether or not, just be very good to see whether or not, it goes any further. I kind of think I lost my train of thought there for a second, but yeah, around whether or not you're able to do more than just natural language, whether you can use it to engage with it, to say, look, I'm looking for this. I'm looking at, actually, no, can you tell me what that is instead, rather than having to have verbose syntax? But just a thought.
Yeah, anyway. Definitely.
So, sorry, we need to get captured on. We are falling behind on our stories. So,
the other lock bit
then. Yes.
Yeah. So, Royal Mail potentially had a hack, didn't they? And it caused massive disruption to delivery in the UK and worldwide. And my understanding is that you still can't go to a Royal Mail place and get them to print you out a label at the moment because that just doesn't work. Well, Royal Mail have been rather sketchy on what's actually happening, aren't they? But,
They said it was not a cyber attack initially.
Yes, they did. Not a cyber attack. Just a network issue or whatever. But Royal Mail has now been adding to Lockbit's leak site on the dark web as of Monday this week. Actually, buying that, I think they usually only give them 48 hours to respond and pay the ransom. Otherwise, they start leaking the data they have. Now, that's up by now, clearly. I've not actually heard whether Royal Mail's paid it, whether the data has been leaked. I've not seen anything in the news, so I'm not sure what's going on with the actual data now. But yeah, it's very telling that Royal Mail has said, it's not a cyber attack, and there we go, Lockbit of all your data there.
You know, this, as I say, Royal Mail weren't clear. To go back to that, initially when this story broke, Royal Mail was saying they had they called it a cyber incident, didn't they, or words to that effect?
Yes.
And this was effectively causing issues with their, export business, wasn't it? Being able to post outside the country. Now, the overseas business, I think, was like over 200 countries and, you know, quite a lot of hundreds of thousands of parcels, you know, over there. Now, as you say, it's come out this Lockbit. What was interesting initially was that there were reports that the National Cybersecurity Center were involved with them. Now, you wouldn't involve the NCSC if you weren't dealing with a cyber incident of a kind of breach or leak incident, would you?
Yeah. Let's
be fair.
No, you would not. You wouldn't call them in because you actually knocked your Shane server over. It's just, No.
And actually, to be honest here, they're not going to pay the ransom. They're not going to cop up to Lockbit. It's you can't do that, and this we don't in this country. We certainly don't negotiate, with criminals. We don't negotiate with terrorists, and let's clash that to this. So the government is not, even though Royal Mail technically is a privatized organization, isn't it? You know, in a funny kind of way, the government is not going to authorize the payment of of funds here to unlock it. What worries me though is this the tip of the iceberg?
Yeah. And what data do they actually have? Because obviously Royal Mail aren't saying anything. So I imagine we're only going to find out what data has actually been stolen once it starts getting released.
Well, yeah. Because at the moment they're saying there's no customer data, aren't they? They're saying no financial data. What data? What is it? The technical program? Technical program files and business data. Oh, come off it. You don't. There's something of value in there to somebody, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, if there was no value in it, Lockbit wouldn't bother holding a ransom for it.
No, of course.
Unless you don't know what's actually being stolen, and in that case, that's on you.
And that's typically what we tend to see, isn't it? There's one claim of like, oh no, it's not that. And next thing, it's like, oh, actually, I've just trawled through this, and the researchers are like, oh well, I've just found all this customer data, we've just found all this business information, etc.
Yeah. So we will see. So the ransom should have been, the time limit they've given would have ticked down by now on Wednesday, but I've not heard anything since. So I wonder if we'll hear anything before next week's podcast.
Yeah, definitely be interested to see whether or not there's a proper statement towards that and that information and or whether additional data is released. Hmm. Talking then of the UK and, institutions, the Bank of England is exploring around digital currencies. And this has kind of been bubbling up for some time, hasn't it? But now we've got a working name, or at least a name of Britcoin, haven't we?
I'm not sure. I think the news agency might have made that one up.
I think they might have done, but I like it.
we'll keep it as that one. But there was a they just published a paper, haven't they, or around a consultation they did. And they are considering a digital version of the pound at some point. Not going to be Bitcoin, though, or based on a distributed ledger. So they did go on to say that it was good. They actually gave the reasons why it wouldn't be a distributed ledger. So they said, you know, distributed ledger technologies and blockchain-based solutions might have advances in guaranteeing consistency and resiliency. Yep. But they also present privacy, scalability, and security challenges. They believe that centrally governed distributed database technologies might achieve the ledger requirements without such limitations. Therefore, you know, these technologies might be more appropriate for this core digital currency design here. I think I would agree with that one, especially, you know, if you're trying to replace the pound, an actual currency, with a digital version. One, it needs to have more central control, I think, because obviously it's backed by the bank itself. You know, it's not a cryptocurrency or a tokenized asset. It is backed by the Bank of England. So it needs that intrinsic value that doesn't, you don't want it to be volatile like Bitcoin is. So yeah, it does need to be centrally managed there. So, I mean, they have been thinking this one through and it does sound interesting, but don't think it's going to be coming anytime soon.
No, I don't. But it's interesting, as you say, you know, we've got a you know, a government central bank here,
yeah,
who, you know, actually isn't saying that, you know, cryptocurrency is the root of the you know, all evil and the devil's spawn.
Yeah.
No, they see actually, you know, the realistic point is
got value.
It will have to happen eventually. You know, everything will become a digital, you know, and currency as we know it will cease to exist. So, you know, they understand that, and I think, you know, the working party here that's looking at it and the papers that have been put together clearly understand that it's going to have to happen. But you're right, it isn't like, yeah, you know, we need to basically mirror Bitcoin because that is the be all end all. It's actually, no, we need to look at this properly.
Yeah,
and I think, go on.
I was just saying, it's not just let's just release digital currency. We still have the traditional currency for a time being anyway. There needs to be systems in place to seamlessly switch between the two. You know, your nan isn't going to understand it, and certainly not she has to then go and have a digital wallet and change this to that, and it just needs to be seamless. So there can be so many other systems that need to be in place before this can be launched.
No, not at all. And I think that's kind of interesting as well, that point you mentioned about the fact where they've said about the ledger technology and the advantages, yeah, there. But actually they're also saying that current ledgers aren't fit for purpose.
You know, certainly not for on this scale, yeah.
No, but no. I look, it's going to have to happen. We're going to move away. We are. This country is moving to being a cashless society. Doesn't mean cash has disappeared, but COVID forced. We were moving that way with contactless. We've led, you know, very quickly with contactless payments, and you know, we've extended the, you know, up to, I was at £100 now. I know other countries had higher for a little bit before us, but you know, the whole process of moving away from cash, you know, the shops and pandemics meant that most places you go now don't want cash. They don't want to handle it. Yep. They don't want to handle it for two reasons, not from a kind of infectious point of view, but also from a point of view, it costs money to handle cash, to put it in,
yep,
into the bank, doesn't it? You know, whereas electronically, it does, yeah, you know, those charges aren't there. And, you know, also you're alienating people. Because I don't carry cash anymore. I don't carry money on me. I have, you know,
nope.
I pay my card everywhere. Now, I'd imagine, you know, that sometimes causes frustration. There was a point when sometimes that was hard. But most businesses now have access to a card payment reader, Square or you know, what's the other one? I can't think of another one's name. But there are other vendors, yeah, available. But, you know, there are so many different ways of doing it now that you don't necessarily need to have a card. Mm-hmm. So a government-backed crypto coin or equivalent makes a lot of sense. Maybe not the next 5 years, maybe not even the next 10 years.
No. I mean, they're not even going to make a decision on whether they go forward with it until the middle of this decade. It's a couple of years before they even decide whether it's worth going forward with.
No, but yeah, I think it's a good idea. Yeah, I'm interested. Very interested to see.
Right.
Well, so then, hang on a second. Oh, we are indeed where I think we were. Let me just check. Hang on. There we go. So the iPhone Ultra then. Oh, dear.
Oh, wow. So we've been hearing rumors about this for a little while now. I think the first thing we heard was it was basically just going to be a rebrand of the Pro Max, wasn't it? And it should be out this year. So you'd have an iPhone 15 Ultra instead of the iPhone 15 Pro Max. But apparently that's all changed now. So Mark Gurman, he's basically come out and said that this is, it's going to be a tier above the Pro Max. It's not going to be up to next year. So next year, iPhone 16, we should get a Pro, a Pro Max, and an Ultra. No idea what's going to be in it. I mean, he's surmising further camera improvements, faster chips, perhaps a larger display. It might be the year that they drop all ports on it. But I mean, this is on the back of Apple's earning call. Mr. Cook, or Tim Apple. Tim Apple has basically gone to say that consumers are willing to really stretch to get the best iPhone they can afford. So Tim thinks there's still a more expensive version to come above the Pro Max, because consumers want that.
They do.
I mean, I'm pretty sure they'd prefer one above that for less money.
But what I would argue here is, what the hell are you going to get for it?
Yeah, I mean, is this then going to... The Pro and the Pro Max aren't going to be as good now to make way for the Ultra? So we're really having a low-end, normal one, Pro and Pro Max in the middle, and the Ultra's the top end? Is that what we're saying? Or are the Pro and the Pro Max still going to be really good phones, this Ultra's going to be extreme?
Well, that's it, isn't it? What is it? You know, and how does it really differentiate from it? Is it going to be, you know, so much more powerful? Is there going to be features that you're never going to get on the other line?
An M2 in it.
But yeah, this is unbelievable. I'm intrigued by this, but on the other hand, I'm like, you know, you've got to really differentiate, because if you look at it, where we are now with the Pro Max, would you really say there was anything different?
Not really. I mean, I can see right. We bring out a 16. We've got a Pro. We've got our normals. We've got a Pro, Pro Max, like we do now. And an Ultra's, you know, improved camera. Maybe it's the first phone that's foldable from Apple. That would be a differentiator that you'd probably be willing to pay more for. But it wouldn't detract away from people who don't want to fold and phone and go out and buy a Pro Max and still get basically all the best features.
No. I would want something... I'll rephrase that. My view is that I would want something that really was different. It would have to stand out. If I'm paying the bigger bucks for it, it really does need to be different. You know, like you say, folding, yeah. M2s, you know, cameras that are... Because if we see it, what we tend to see is the Pro Max is a dilution, isn't it?
Yeah. And also maybe... what was I going to say? A different physical design. Not just fold, what I'm talking about, but it needs to look different from a Pro Max. If I'm spending that much more money, chances are I want to show it off and I want people to know I've got the Ultra. Maybe that's vanity there, but it's going to play into people's thoughts on it.
It is vanity, isn't it? I think that is ultimately what this is all about, isn't it? What are people prepared to buy? What are they, you know, Apple are meant to do? And I think Apple's thing is their differentiators. Is it just going to be the name? I mean, if it's like take the Watch Ultra, right? That has differentiating features over the other range between. Because if you take a Watch 8 and a Watch SE, Watch 7, there's not really much difference.
And they look identical, really.
Yeah, that's the key point, right? The Ultra on the Watch, it looks different, and I think that's the thing here. This phone needs to stand out, because my Pro Max, apart from being bigger, I put it next to, you know, standard iPhone 14. Let's be honest, your average person in the street, apart from the size difference, isn't really going to see anything, are they? You know?
No, exactly.
So for me, it's got to be something bigger. It's got to be something different, and you know, and that's the way to go forward with it. You know, so yeah, I'm interested. I, you know, of course I am. I've always gone for the Pro, or you know, the Max versions, or you know, the Plus versions, you know, because I wanted something different. But I've got to say that, you know, it's got to really stand out for me. No point paying, you know, more money on top, and I just get a slightly better camera than I could get.
No, it'd actually have to really justify it, wouldn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's probably a good place for us to wrap up for today then. We'll be back next week with episode 124 of the Weekly Tech Rant as we move on through February this year. Of course, you can still find us on Twitter without the gold check mark at Weekly Tech Rant. No, we will not be paying. We're also online at techrant.online for all of our show notes information. And of course, wherever you get your podcast, you want to tell your friends, whatever platform they listen to, we're pretty much on there. And if we're not, drop us the line and we'll make sure we get posted on there as well.
So, I've been Jay.
I've been Carl. Have a good day, all.